Moncrief on News Talk
with the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
Now, what does your address say about you? Obviously, it gives a good indication of your socioeconomic status, but things such as street names can also tell us a hell of a lot about the societies we live in and where others live. Deirdre Mask is the author of The Address Book, What Our Street Addresses Reveal About Identity, Race, Wealth and Power. Deirdre, good afternoon to you.
Hello, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
I was surprised to learn that a majority of people on our planet don't have an address.
Exactly. Yeah, that's sort of how I actually got started on writing the book. I came across this weird statistic, which is that, you said 75% or so of the world doesn't have reliable addresses or no addresses at all. And it's sort of something quirky because you kind of think of it as, what's an address? It's just some place you get your post. But actually, it turned out to be hugely important. Like, you can't get a bank account, you can't get credit, you can't get packages, you can't get deliveries. Sometimes you can't vote or, register your kids for school. So it's one of the reasons why the World Bank has actually said it's actually one of the cheapest and easiest ways of helping lift people out of poverty is to give them street addresses. So that sort of sent me on my way when I found that out.
And there are NGOs that actually work on trying to give people addresses.
Exactly. And in fact, Ireland plays a huge role in this. There's an amazing charity called Dressing the Unaddressed, which is giving addresses in the slums of India. And one of my chapters, I go to visit their project in Kolkata, the new name for Calcutta. Mm. For this very reason. Exactly. Like, if you can go and give people addresses, there's a few functions. Obviously, they can get bank accounts, which is great, because otherwise, where are you saving your money in the slums underneath your bed? You can get credit so that you can borrow money. But also, there's a sense of inclusion. If you don't have an address and the rest of the city has an address, you're left out. So there's some sense that you're belonging. And a lot of people like that idea of belonging by being listed on the map.
And what's interesting from your book is when you realize that addresses are a relatively recent development, really. But it's also very interesting to see how various places are named for their function. And they have all sorts of functions. In Dublin, on the north side of the River Liffey, which is in the centre of Dublin, there's a section of that called Bachelor's Walk. And that was because that's where the sex workers used to be. This is predicated on the rather optimistic idea that only single men would be visiting these sex workers. But as you point out in your book, it's given slightly more graphic name in many English towns.
Yes. I don't know if I can say that on the radio, but...
you can say the first bit, grope is...
I can say grope lane, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, sort of interesting. These street names used to be, quite just practical. There's Church Street where the Church Street, there was Market Street where the market was, there was Fish Market Street where the fish market was, and then, there was Grope Street where, where people would go for prostitution. And it wasn't always prostitution either. I mean, these were times when, there's all sorts of other liaisons that people have with each other, and that would be a place to do it. It was only much later, sometimes, a lot of people credit it to the French Revolution, when we started getting sort of high-minded about street names. We wanted to commemorate people that we thought they had some meaning other than just being a practical way of navigating a city when there weren't very many maps.
Mm. Does that make sense? It's also very interesting as well, the amount of instances when place names and street names are changed for political reasons. We want to pretend we're a different place to the one we are now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are streets in, where was it? Was it Croatia? It's in the book where, the same street's gone through six different names in someone's lifetime, because that's sort of the first step. The conqueror comes in. And in fact, one of my chapters is on Berlin. And one of the first things the Nazis did when they took over was rename all the streets. And so they came in, they renamed all the streets so that every street had a town, had a name or a plaza named after Hitler. They named him after Nazi martyrs. And at the same time, they scrubbed the landscape completely of Jewish street names. Anybody named, even people who converted, it didn't matter. Anybody who had a Jewish name, they scrubbed. And funnily enough, when the war was over and the Allied powers come back and they're ruling, one of the first things they did, out of all the chaos of Berlin, is they changed the names. It becomes like this marker of power, right? The power to name is a hugely important part of leadership, really.
And there's nowhere in China named after Mao Zedong.
Yeah, exactly. So, the Chinese, I talked to sociologists and political scientists about this, and they couldn't quite give you know, a specific reason, but generally, I think it's the communist ideal, you know, this idea that there is nobody who's above anybody else, and that commemorating a street after a person is something, you know, against the ideals of equality. And, you know, and which makes a lot of sense, actually, when you think about it. So names tend to work differently in different places based on these ideas.
Who first came up with the idea of having odd numbers on one side and even numbers on the other side, and why?
Yeah,
what's the advantage to that?
Yeah, well, the advantage to that is in, if you're just sort of walking along and streets just have, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it's really hard to tell where a street number that you're looking for is on the street, because you just have to walk for ages, you can't tell. So there's odds, evens, it moves quicker so that you can tell. It's easier to think about it when you're actually walking down the street, but it makes a lot more sense in terms of navigation and trying to locate yourself on a street. And that's actually, well, some people say some Europeans were doing it, but it's actually really an American invention. And the Americans were much more, you know, I'm American, and, you know, a lot of streets in America are numbered. Like the most popular street name in America is actually Second Street, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Second other than First, because First would be Main Street. And the Americans actually were quite rational at the start for a number of reasons in naming and numbering their streets. And this house numbering thing kind of came out of it. Whereas in Europe, you know, you rarely get numbered streets. And in fact, they're actually even banned in some places. So that's actually another chapter of the book, is exploring the reasons why Americans like them, but the Europeans hate them so much.
Oh, that is quite interesting. Unfortunately, we don't have the time to talk about though.
Totally fine.
But Deirdre, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That's Deirdre Mask, author of The Address Book, What Our Street Addresses Reveal About Identity, Race, Wealth and Power. We're going to take a break after that. The Rules of Contagion.
Moncrief on News Talk
with the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.